I just think it's time the city of Sunken Valley elected a mayor who is willing to fight for the residents of this great city. Mayor Woods, in my opinion, is not it. Look what happened when feral dogs overtook our city. Rick from North Sunken Valley, you're on Talk of the Town.
Yeah, hi, Jim. For my money, the El Jefe Taco at Los Quesos is far and away the superior taco.
Okay, just a reminder that this is Talk of the Town, not Taco the Town. Chris, you're on the air.
Hey, Jim, I completely agree with you.
Thanks, Chris. About what?
The El Jefe sucks. Taco Town Santa Maria fish tacos are the best in the Quint Valley area. Bye.
Okay, that's all the time we have here on Talk of the Town, not Taco the Town. I'm Jim Taco, which is, once again, my actual name. Coming up next is the Mascot Wedding Show. Goodbye. Why don't you ask them about tacos, you fat pieces of shit?
Your microphone's still on.
Oh, who gives a rat's ass here?
Hey, everybody, this is the Mascot Wedding Show, the Internet's Hour of Unspeakable Power. My name is David Hotta.
My name is Mac Blake, and we are your podcast lions.
Go, Raul.
This is episode 273, Once Upon a
Mattress Sale.
Oh, it seems like it's going to be an exciting episode.
Yeah.
That's right, we're recording from the Hodgecast Studios in Austin, Texas.
That's right.
David Hotta, how are you doing?
I am dynamite.
Oh, dynamite.
Yeah. That was a lie, but let's just power through it.
I'm like wet dynamite.
Yeah, exactly.
Not effective, but still dangerous.
I'm factory recall. I will blow your hand
factory
off.
Factory recall dynamite. I would just, what publication would that be in? Because sometimes it's like if you fuck up a car somehow, yeah. Like Toyota has to like publish that recall in like Time.
Oh, I just figured you'd get a mailer.
You'd get a mail.
Yeah.
Dear dynamite purchaser.
First of all, thank you for giving us your email address.
Yes.
That took a lot of courage. But yeah, we're taking your dynamite yeah. back.
Dear Dave at AOL.com. Dave buys a lot of dynamite. After that hot start, anyway.
How are you, Mac Blake?
I am also, well, I told you, I'm like wet dynamite.
Oh, I thought that applied to me, but that's fine.
No, I'm doing well.
Cool.
Yes, right now, we, even though you probably will not hear this for years,
mm-hmm.
We're on the cusp of South by Southwest as we record this, and that is a oddly stressful time in Austin.
Why do you say that? Oh, for Austin or for you?
Just for living here for some reason.
Are you just projecting?
Oh, what do you mean?
I mean, like, is it stressful for you to be like, oh, the city?
Oh, no, I was definitely talking about myself. Okay. Like, it's stressful to live here in a way. And part of that stress is still that residual thing, which I'd hope I have grown out of, which is there's so much fun stuff about to happen, and I'm missing it.
Right.
And that's something I feel like I've done a pretty good job of, like, you know, not worrying about. But for some reason, this week brings it back. Anyway, before we get too much farther.
Yes.
Let's introduce our guest, special guest on the podcast today. He was the executive producer, is that correct?
Yes.
Of The Daily Show. He also has his own Comedy Central Presents Half Hour. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Rory Albanese.
Hey. Wow. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. That was huge.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me here at Hodge, the Hodge Studios.
You can also call it the Hodge Pound.
Yeah, at the Hedge Hodge's house. I appreciate it.
We might put in some sound effects of some people hooting.
Yeah, right,
obviously.
There. Yeah,
it might obviously be like a real Married with Children.
Sound effects.
Give a shout out to my pound over there.
Yeah, yeah. Hot pound.
We'll do it all in post.
Post.
How are you, Rory?
I'm doing well. I feel good, guys. I feel, I like Austin. I'm happy to be here. I'm not really staying in the heart of Austin. I'm staying more in the left artery next to the highway at a hotel that doesn't have food.
Yeah.
But I like the town.
Yeah.
I do like, and I'm coming back for Moon Tower, which I know Mac and I will be
yes.
working on together. No, it's good. Everything's good, man.
Excellent. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I say that in the sense of, as a comedian, everything's good. But underneath, I'm, neurotic and sad.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But that's life.
It's funny because Cap City, I really like Cap City a whole lot, but it is in like a strip mall up north.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have, I mean, inside it's fine, but there's also like a Taekwondo place. Mm-hmm. And a Best Buy insurance, which is not affiliated with Best Buy. I don't know why I thought it was.
Yeah. There
well,
used to be.
It's got the logo.
Yeah, they stole the logo. I assumed it was like, oh, well, Best Buy sells insurance, and they do it in the strip mall, not in a store. I guess I didn't really think about it too hard.
Yeah. It's like when like the Babies R Us closes and then another business opens up that's just an anagram of Babies R Us so they can save the letters.
Yeah, sign. It's like, it's right. It's like Tacos R Us. The reverse R was up there already. Why not just roll with it?
Maybe they sell some baby clothes at Rabies Bus.
I applaud how quick that was.
You went with the anagram. I know. What was stealing the R, but yours was smarter.
I've told this story before, and I'll tell it again now. There was this Burger King that closed, and someone, they had like a marquee where they would, I guess, put up the letters that said, Whopper on sale. But once it closed down, it just said closed. And some kid took the letters, closed the C by drawing a line and turning into a D, and changed closed into just do LSD.
Sometimes when I see that, I'm so happy. I'm so proud of the creativity that is out there. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like there's one, a buddy of mine used to talk about it in his stand-up years ago, but Canal Street, like every time he stopped at Canal Street in New York, there was always one dude who scratched out the C and made it Anal Street. And you're just like, you know what?
Yeah.
Good for you. You know? Good. God bless.
Keep fighting the fight.
Yeah, fight the fight, buddy.
You'll trick some tourists into thinking Canal Street. I guess we got
to
do it.
Yeah.
Ah, damn it.
I wanted to go to Canal Street, but this seems interesting.
So how much? To get your shirt pressed? Shirt, yeah. This is Canal Street Cleaners. Oh. I was hoping you'd clean out my butthole and the tube that connects it to my stomach.
I beg you, but the tube that connects.
I don't know science terms. I'm a rube from out of town.
Yeah. The real anal
Excuse
tube.
Excuse me, doctor. Before you do the surgery, did you just say tube? Can I see a degree real quick?
I'll show you a diagram of the tube instead.
Sure. This degree is just outside the door.
Doc,
I had to fill it out on the dashboard.
Ring.
Hello.
Hey, Rick. Look, they found me out again.
Oh, God damn it. Did you try to do the fake doctor thing again?
Tried. Succeeded. I was there for months.
How far did you get into the tube?
I cleaned out over 12 tubes until one guy caught me.
You get that 13th tube free.
Yeah, I know. I just went through so many doctor's ropes because it's splattering them with satisfied jizz.
I thought you were going to say sweat from nerves, but a different route.
The fake doctor is a steely guy.
We're not on terrestrial radio. We say jizz. Yeah. Come on. We're not sweating it up for people.
So, Mr. Rory, as you prefer to be called.
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, that's actually not true.
I can't imagine that's ever true.
It's never been true.
I thought it was.
We're not his cleaning lady.
By the way, on the way over here, you sent a text message to who?
My friend, Frank Thompson.
No, you don't know Frank Thompson. You're not that big.
I'm not that big. No, I said I have an ongoing joke with my old boss, John Stewart, about Jimmy John's.
Uh-huh.
Because when we were on the road in Minneapolis years ago with The Daily Show, we ate a lot of Jimmy John's, which they don't have in New York, and we're both big fans of sandwiches. So anytime we're around Jimmy John's, it's exciting. But I'm on the road now, and there's Jimmy John's everywhere that I am. So I just have a habit of every time I just ate Jimmy John's. Every time I eat it, when I take a picture, and I'm like, "What's up, sucker?" And I send it to him, and he's always so angry. You know what I mean?
Does he just take a picture of like his bank account?
No. Listen, it's not about money. It's about deliciousness. All right, buy deliciousness. Yeah. No, but it's funny because there's a when you're a stand-up, even when you're on TV and famous and all that, you still miss that kind of stuff. Mm. You still miss the road. You still miss the like. You know, Jimmy John's breakfast/lunch at 4 o'clock. You know?
Yeah.
It's literally Mac texting me. He's like, "Yeah, you want to do the podcast?" And it's like 3 o'clock and I'm just getting up. I go, "Yeah, and I need food, you know." I haven't eaten yet, and sure.
I'm going to need breakfast first at 4 p.m.
Yeah, does the podcast come with Jimmy John's?
I've been preparing to do more road work by eating like a monster for the past 28 years.
Good for you.
Yeah,
good for you.
I feel like I'm in real good, terrible shape.
I'm going to die. Like, I have a physical next week with a doctor, which I haven't had in a while, and I'm actually worried about the results. I'm scared he's going to be like, "What have you been doing to your body?"
Can I ask you a question? Why are you getting a physical?
Because I want to know.
Okay.
I want to know. I want to benchmark how unhealthy I am and then maybe try to get healthy.
And you could probably get a tight five out of that. Just like.
Ah, solid. Are you kidding me? That's all I do. That's the only reason I'm doing it.
You know? I thought for a second you might be going out for like spring ball or something like that.
No. Got to
get that pre-physical.
Yeah, that's right. Got to get your proper's in order.
Yeah, yeah. No, totally. And then I'm going to get my chest waxed, you know what I mean? Ooh. Just to be ready for LA.
Gotta be.
Your chest wax, know what I mean.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, ladies.
Head on down to Canal Street.
Mm-hmm. Look at that. So how long were you on The Daily Show?
I was there for 14 years.
14
years. Yeah, I started as a production assistant, which is essentially, you know, entry level of all entry level positions. You're just sort of there to do whatever it is they ask, a lot of like tape logging and errands and runs and things around town. But it was awesome. I mean, you know, I was making like $400 a week and wasn't getting paid during our hiatus week, so I was on unemployment and all that stuff. But it was cool, man. It was I figured I'd be there about 6 months, do that, then go to LA and do stand up full time and all that and I don't know. Then the show started to sort of grow while I was there and it just worked out, you know. I mean, it worked out in the sense of it took me a long time. It's easy to be like, yeah, so that was a PA. And next thing you know, boom, I'm hitting the Emmy streak. It's like that wasn't really like that. That's like the abridged version. There was actually like 8 years of me kind of like shoveling coal into a furnace and like being unhappy and like not making much money. Yeah, exactly. And like, and just, you know, being in the grind of it and not feeling like anyone was appreciating the fact that I was funny or had abilities, da, 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 da. But then, you know, at one point it broke open. Usually it's when people leave. Mm-hmm. And the show's in some kind of a dire situation. Then I'm like, I can do it.
You know? You there, boy.
Yeah, I'm like, me? You there, the piss boy. You look like the king.
So, and you didn't overlap with Kilbourne at all. You were
No. I started, John started in July, January of 99, and I started in July of 99, right out of college. I graduated in May of 99 and went to Europe for a month like you do, you know, or some do, with my friends. And then I came home and I got a job at The Daily Show because I'm from New York, figuring, oh, cool, I'll get to do this, like I said, and then go out to L.A. And then I'm going to L.A. now and I'm 36. So it definitely took more time out of my life than I had anticipated. But it was great. You know, it was a great experience. Mm-hmm.
So 14 years, how many, and if this is a gross question, I apologize. How many Emmys did you end up winning?
That's not gross. Gross would be how much butt sex did you have, backstage?
Follow-up question.
Well, here's the thing. When you work at a show like ours, which was we were obviously on a lucky streak for a while with the Emmys, the show is winning consistently. So once I got an Emmy eligible title, I started personally winning them with the show. But I don't have any, individuals. I have Emmys. I have 9 of them. Is the answer.
Okay, there you go.
I have 9 Emmys. But that's, you know, it's one of those weird things because everyone who works at the show doesn't get to get a statue because you have to have a certain level or title or job there. Mm-hmm. But it's unfortunate because everyone who works there at any level deserves one. So it's a strange thing to feel like, oh man, I got 9 of these things. And some people, you know, like don't have, but again, they are all won them. In other words, in the sense that they worked at the show, but you don't get the physical statue.
Of course.
A certain title.
Yeah.
What number Emmy was just the fuck you Emmy? Like, oh, I want it. It's nice to have these 3. And then when 8 rolls around, you're like, I could beat a man to death with this one.
Build a tiny house out of these things.
I can get out of anything.
Hey, look.
I don't know, man. It was never the fuck you Emmy, but it definitely did start to feel like uncomfortable. For me, the worst part was I loved all the other shows we were up against. I loved, you know, obviously SNL and Conan and all, and Colbert, who's like one of my favorite people. All of the shows we've, you know, competed against in the years are like, you're fans of them. And like, I'm in comedy because of SNL and Lorne Michaels and stuff. And then all of a sudden, like, you start to feel like those people hate you, which is terrible because it's like, maybe they do, maybe they don't. But it's like, it feels that way because they're starting to get frustrated. But we weren't doing anything sneaky. We weren't like bribing Emmy judges. Right. Like, we just would go and then we'd win. But 1 year I made the speech because John wasn't there, so I made the speech, and I was making it with one of the another guy who was a EP there at the time, and I don't know, we sort of planned like a bit or two at the beginning, and like they didn't work, and then I just sort of started talking. It's a tough room, and you're like looking out at a group of people who aren't. The thing about award shows you got to remember is, 3/4 of the room loses. You know what I'm saying? So by the time you go, most people are unhappy. And then, so I don't know. I just kind of grabbed the thing. I was like, oh man, you know, crazy year. Because it was the year Conan and the NBC thing happened.
Oh.
And Colbert had gone to a Rock. So I like thought they were a shoo-in. And then I was like, I don't know. You know, everything with Conan and Steven and Rock. I'm like, I don't know, but we just keep winning. And everyone laughed. And then I was like, all right. I was like, well, you know, we work our ass. I don't say ass up, but you know, we work really hard. And if somebody works at The Daily Show, hire them. But people took that as very much me being a dick.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the impression that came out of that, and that was not all intentional. Instead of it being like, oh my God, we're so lucky and thank you. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I was just like, yeah, we just keep winning. Like I meant it more along the lines of, wow, who can control this? But it definitely, there's definitely still people, I think, that worked at some of those other shows that are angry about that or think I'm an asshole. And I really feel, I harbor guilt for, I would say, probably 20 to 30 years per issue.
Who doesn't?
You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's one of those things where I still am self-conscious about it when I see guys from SNL or whatever. And I'm like, because even when I left The Daily Show and there was like a little blurb on like a website or something, there was a comment underneath like, he'll always be remembered as the asshole who like gave that Emmy speech. And I was like, but meanwhile, the guy who wrote it was like, Dr. Zibidoo. You know? I'm like, just tell me who you are, man. I apologize, you know. But those are the problems with it. It's like, you don't mean it to ever feel that way or see that way. And it's like, are you supposed to apologize? Are you supposed to say, oh, my God, I'm so sorry we won, or you guys deserve it more? It's like, at the same time, we work really hard. So you want to win, but then, you know, it's a very odd thing to happen. It was very nice this past year when, like, Colbert won. And I was like, great.
Yeah.
Like, we want that. Like, we were always rooting for everyone as much as we were rooting for ourselves.
I remember when Colbert won because I logged on as Dr. Zippy-Doo.
Oh, you
I
did? Said, wait, that was you?
I said, finally, that Albanese guy will get his.
Mac, I feel like you're not paying attention to the conversation that's happening right now.
Yeah.
I said, I hope that Lebanese guy forgets.
wait a minute. Now you're really lost.
I hope
but
he...
That, by the way, talk about, like, like the ridiculousness of the way my brain works or anyone in comedy's brain works. It's like, I actually think people are thinking about me, good or bad. Mm-hmm. That people are sitting around being like, Rory Albert. Like, nobody's thinking about me. Yeah. Like, probably not even my parents, you know what I mean? But like in my brain, everyone's sitting around SNL going, someday we'll get that Albanese guy back, you know? And
Rory, congratulations, you're in comedy.
Yeah, exactly.
You think everybody's thinking about you.
Yeah, everybody's thinking about me and I'm terrible.
You know? I will say that your name is a good one to curse.
Rory Albanese. It is. I'm thinking about, that's the other thing too, is I'm thinking about like just changing my name altogether.
Oh, what are you going for?
I don't know. Because I'm going to get a driver's license in LA, so it's so tempting to just change it to like, you know, Slag McMasters, you know? Like something, you know, just completely weird and cool.
And porny.
I really like the word dynamite. I thought Rory Dynamite would be pretty solid too.
Yeah.
Can I... toss one at you?
Mm-hmm.
Rock Dynamite.
Rock Dynamite's good.
Yeah.
I'm going to make an amendment there.
Please.
Rock W Dynamite. The W stands for wet for those days you're not feeling
bad. Now, I've noticed there's a trend, you know, a lot of people are changing their names with the initials, like, you know, J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
And then there's this guy who wrote the movie Lost at Sea. Called named J.W. Chandler. Like, there's a kind of a little trend going to like the J.R. Tolkien route.
Uh-huh.
That's another
one. Like George Railroad Martin.
That's right.
Exactly. Yes,
exactly. George Railroad Martin's a perfect example.
Author of the Game of Arms books. that AMC series is based on.
And by the way, I love talking arms with Hardwick.
He'll do it.
Yeah, talking arms, bro. No, but there's just something about being like, I'm R.R. Albanese, you know? Like, what's the other R for? I don't know. It just sounds like I know more, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely, it's very hoity-toity.
Yeah, it's hoity-toity.
Yeah, know? It'll get you into like some like intellectual
It feels
shows.
More of like a writer's name,
yeah.
You know?
You can be on The Daily Show with a name like that.
I feel like if you're going to change your name, that's something you want to sleep on. Because I feel like once you start throwing out name ideas, it's late.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, you go to that name change office.
It's like a tattoo.
At 3 a.m. and you're like, what's my name? Hot Snatchman. No.
Yeah. You wake up the next morning and instead of a tattoo, you've got a driver's license in your hand. You go, what have I done? What have I done?
Sad news today is a man unrelated to Rory Albanese named Rock Dynamite shoots up a school. It's like, God damn it.
I wonder if he's a jerk like that Albanese guy. From my perspective, and I don't know what this is worth you, if anything, but I remember when Jon Stewart took over The Daily Show and Kilbourne left. The Daily Show went from this thing that was kind of an afterthought. I was like, you know, the show that's between South Park and BattleBots or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it turned into this, like, amazing, like, cultural thing where now it's like, I don't know. I mean, the Daily Show in that time period... Just I don't know how to describe it. I mean, I don't have to. You won 9 Emmys and deservedly so. Like,
yeah. But when you reached the point where The Daily Show became a place where people actually got their news,
yeah.
Did it change in your mind? Did the stakes get higher, or were you just okay with it.
Well, no, that's the thing about the show, I think, that made it, I mean, I say made it like it's gone. I mean, I'm gone, but it, what makes it so special is that the attitude within the building never changed. And then that comes from John. I mean, he, at no point were we ever buying into that. Like, at no point were we ever going, oh man, we got to do this right. Oh, like, the, you know, people aren't going to get their information. Like, mm-hmm. we literally approach it every day, and people, and I can tell you this for a fact because I've been asked this question a lot over the years, particularly when I was there, and people always want me to say, or somebody from there to say, like, yeah, well, we have an agenda, and the agenda mm-hmm. is to push the left forward, and but we don't. Like, mm-hmm. it's just a comedy show. I mean, we really approach it every day, like, what's the best topic, what's the thing we not want to talk about, and how do we make it funny? I think what happened simultaneously to the show being good and a quality show, which it is that people became more interested in this stuff. In I looked at it as a turning point being in the building was Bush-Gore, mm-hmm. that election, where, like, before that, it seemed people pretty apathetic about politics and didn't really care, and who cares, my vote doesn't count. And then all of a sudden it comes down to 560-something mm-hmm. votes, and people go, oh, well, this kind of does matter. And then it really heated up politically, and then you add that with cable news, 24-hour news, mm-hmm. and then you add the internet, and now you've got like a constant stream of people talking about this and that, and then you know, sort of like the, you know, the perfect storm for a show like The Daily Show to step in and, you know, comment on some of the stuff that people are thinking about and talking about and want to hear about. Now, there was no moment in time, and nor has there been since, where it's like, now the response, like, you know, there's never a meeting where John comes in and goes, you know, our responsibility here is to make sure that America knows the truth. We come in and we're just like, all right, you know what? This thing with the Harry Reid's pretty insane. Like, you know, and then we watch it, we talk about it, we figure out a point of view, we write a bunch of jokes. You know, we've got a really tight process, but yeah, so there's, I don't know, it being in the building, it never seemed any different. When people started to really care about it, and it became kind of Trekkie, like there's a nerdiness to the Daily Show fans that's always funny to me because that doesn't really exist within the building where we know. I mean, there's a few people there who could probably like rattle off everything we've ever done, but I'm not one of them, you know, because every day for me was just like, got to get this show done, and here's how fast we got to do it, and we got to be, here's our deadline, and this isn't good, this is working, changes. So every day was just a grind to get that show done. You wake up the next day, do the next show. But, you know, every now and then I'll go to a college or I'll do like a Q&A and somebody will be like, an episode 474, you guys, and I'm like, you know, I'm like, that sounds awesome, man. So what show is that? You know?
Well, I mean, it boils down to the fact that you're in people's living rooms four nights a week.
Well, yeah, the show is, absolutely. Yeah. I'm in certain people's living rooms, but they never know it.
Oh.
I'm usually in their basements.
The Albany's Creeper.
Got to do those high-powered jobs. You got to get your R&R where you can.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the show, I mean, like, it grew to the point where, you know, McCain was coming on and stuff, and you could see that.
And then he hated us.
Yeah. The show, like, you saw how much work was going into that thing, and unlike, I mean, you hear, like, the war stories about the long nights at SNL and that crazy schedule, but you guys were on four nights a week. What was it like? I mean, how were your hours there?
Well, that's the thing. We did, when I first started there, the process by which the show was produced was a little chaotic, and it was over the years it developed. One of the things that I did, one of the reasons I believe that I even was promoted is because, like John, I was very obsessed with the process and getting it done a certain way. And I really believe that, like, you know, if you do it a certain way, you can achieve not only better show, meaning more content within the show, but also get people out and home at a normal hour. Mm-hmm. We never had the like 4 a.m. It's not, you know, it's funny. It's like, I feel like the Daily Show, at some point, if somebody wrote a book about it, it's going to be a boring book. There's no like good, like everyone's doing coke and like, you know, like staying at Belushi's apartment. And, like, there's no.
Hodgman's got a quattro.
And, like, and then like Mick Jagger. Like, yeah, right. And then like Mick Jagger was banging David Bowie in Hodgman's office. Like, there's no like crazy.
Gross. They're so old.
Well, I mean, you know, things happen, man. It's comedy.
Fair enough.
It's comedy. It was literally like we got it down to a pace that was come in, you know, writers meet at 9 a.m. We try to meet the day before, and that's became a big part of the process in the last couple of years, is we meet at 3 p.m. in the afternoon before and sort of have this like two, we call it like kind of a double piston system where, like, as we're producing one to that day's show, there's another group who's starting to look ahead to the next day's show. And like in doing that, we were able to like triple the amount of content we were putting out in a night. Plus you have like the addition of technology like TiVo and all these things. When I started there, I was in the video department, the studio production department, and it was, you know, a couple VCR. I don't mean like back in my day, but it kind of is in technology. Like that's sure. what it is, right? It was like two VCRs and a few like big beta decks, which were like the TV standard at the time. And we would have to stay and record everything and watch it and record it.
Wow.
And now, and we have the AP news feed come in, but now it's like, you know, we got 12 TiVos recording everything all the time. We have got this new software that came in. We also took that department from three people, which was the department I ended up running for a while, to like five. And then after I left, to like eight. After I left the department, I mean, and now it's probably eight or nine people in there still. And so it really, like, the show grew as the technology grew. And then it sort of became like, well, what do we want it to be and where can we take it? And then we started finding, like, there's a service that searches closed captioning called it's not Streamline, a Snapstream. So it's like...
So you can just look at what... Like
right, and again, you still need you still need to have the comedic instinct and hunches, and you still need to see the trends in the news and go, well, man, everyone keeps talking about this talking point. How many times does this come up? And then you can sort of search in the closed captioning for what people have said and then find it. It still takes a while, but not as long. But the thing is, all that happened when that stuff sort of came in, meaning the technology, is instead of going, great, now we get out of here at 4, we just... made the show that much more complicated.
Yeah, you've got more stuff.
So we just added more to it. But we ended up working from like, I mean, my hours were probably 9 to 8. Towards the end, it was more like 10 to 8 because I was rolling in. Like, that was when I was like, I should probably leave soon. I'm not in on time. But yeah, so it was a pretty standard work day. There were chaotic days and crazy days, and we did live shows sometimes. But we had a good, pretty good rhythm with it. And we would rehearse every day at 4 and then tape at 6 and... You know, that's how we did it.
When you're telling me, like, or when you were talking about the two piston system, my reaction was, oh, cool. Why should that surprise me, though? Oh, this professional show does things professionally?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but yeah,
they have a system?
They're a well-oiled machine.
You'd be surprised how many years it took to get there, though, because one, when you're that's the hardest thing about producing for me, and why I was ready to take a little break from it, is because when you're managing creative people, you're not managing, it's very, you want people to be creative. You want people to be able to like take their shoes off and do what they need to like get their juices flowing. But at the same time, you got to get stuff done. Mm-hmm. So we sort of had to get a little bit more strict with the writing process. And, you know, it used to sort of be like the writers would write. They'd be done around 1 o'clock. Then they'd play darts and Mario Kart, you know, and hang out. And then like the next day they come in. And that was great. But then it sort of became like, you know, I think I was probably... For a lot of the writers, like they were like this fucking asshole, because then coming from the studio production department where we weren't ever playing Mario Kart, it was sort of going like, hey man, there's a whole afternoon here, like why don't we use it? You know, no offense to the darts games, but we're paying these guys, you know, and so then it sort of became a we had to like tamp down on that a bit, and it worked, and I think it took a while for people to adjust because most people, you know, aren't used to change, and that's across the board. And it was hard, and the hardest thing was kind of pushing the thing and go, trust me, like, trust John, trust the rest of us. Like, if we do this at 3 o'clock, we're going to get more show done. You'll have everything will work better. And once, you know, it's hard to, like, push those things forward because you'll do a 3 o'clock meeting and it works, and then the next day there isn't one. Why wasn't there one? Oh, we didn't have time today. Like, no, it's got to be every day, you know? Like, it's very hard to convince people that, like, these new sort of methods are okay. And then once we did, now that's why when Oliver took over, it ran so smoothly, because we had built this system that runs very, very, very well. And then, you know, Oliver is also extremely smart and talented. So it wasn't easy, but it was as easy as it could have been to like take John out and put Oliver in, you know?
Right. Can't wait to get on my message board. Hey, you know that Albanese guy? Guess what else he's a dick about? Hates Mario Kart.
Yeah. That was the whole thing, is I kept losing at Mario Kart, and I was like, you know what? No more Mario Kart.
You hang on to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That leads into my next question. What was behind the decision to leave The Daily Show?
I just didn't been there, man. 14 years. It's like I wanted to do stand-up full-time. I had the opportunity over the years to leave and do that. I didn't take it. I don't regret not taking it, but you know, that was the thing I wanted to be a writer performer more than a writer producer, and I was definitely by the end really I was writing and producing, but we have plenty of great comedy writers there. Like I was much more sort of managing, getting a lot of jokes on every night, but at some point you start to realize, hey, like, I know I can write for the show. Like, a lot of the jokes on the show come from my head. And then you start going, well, I don't know, maybe I'll save some of those for me and put them on my in my act and do my own thing. But more than anything, it's just I felt like I wasn't as good as I could be at it anymore because I was tired. And, like, that... It's easy to stay somewhere and go, well, look, I'm getting paid a lot of money. I got an office. I could definitely float for a year or two and just, like, stockpile some cash. And but then you don't want to be that guy. Right. People are like, oh, here comes Johnny late, doesn't care. And I was kind of getting there, you know? And it was after last year.
Got to work on those names.
Yeah, I know. Well, usually I'd come up with one and then have the writers punch it up.
No.
And be like, how about Tommy doesn't care very late? Mm-hmm. You're good.
Got me teeth.
You know what? Why don't you take a break? Play some Mario Kart.
Oh, he's a cool boss now.
Yeah, hey, hey, sit in that chair backwards. What else, guys?
Old Johnny cool boss now.
Hey, there we go. Hey, hey. See what happens? We were just goofing around.
Tommy Chill in charge. Whoa!
But I mean, it's 14 years. No one's going to accuse you.
No.
Yeah,
it's not about
makes
people.
Perfect sense.
Yeah, it's just it's one of these things where, like, after the election, 2012, we were on the road. We did Tampa and North Carolina. We did those conventions. I was at, like, the top of my game. I felt like I was, like, all over it. I was, like, couldn't be more into it. Clint Eastwood yelled at a chair. Like, shit was good, man. Shit was good. There was gold in them there hills. And then we came back. We did the live election show. And then after that, I just sort of started to feel like I felt my energy towards it kind of waning. And then by the time, you know, last year, around February, March, I started going, man, I don't know. You don't. I just didn't want to be in a position of authority and not have the be giving it 110%. I feel like it's silly. There's other people there that deserve an opportunity to have that job and do that job and are capable of doing the job I did. And the people there who worked there deserve the person who's in charge to be as engaged as they are. And I really started to feel like I wasn't. And I started thinking about, well, I want to do this and I want to do this. And oh, maybe I can take some time off. And I was always leaving to do stand-up. But when you headline, you have to go Wednesday to Sunday. I couldn't do that with a job. So it really just came down to that. When I left, you know, my conversation with John, it was – yeah, I think he had a sense that I was getting ready to go because I kind of, like, signed this deal with Warner Brothers TV for, like, you know, and wrote a pilot and all this stuff and for CBS. So he kind of knew it was, like, approaching, but he got it. I said, look, man, like, I really just want to be on the road doing stand-up. I want to be at Jimmy John's on a Tuesday or whatever, taking pictures and sending them to you. And he was like, yeah. And he was like, you don't have to explain wanting to go do stand-up with me. Like, I get it, you know. So I'd like to work. I'd like to do something with him again. I'd like to do something that's, like, one day a week and, like, 24 episodes a year and, like, have – it's just a lot of time. It's a lot of your time. And 14 years, man, is a lot of time to have put into something. So, you know what? You just – yeah, I had to do the next thing.
So you left The Daily Show in October of last year. Mm-hmm. So it's been less than a year.
Oh, yeah. It's been, like, what, 5 months or
something? Yeah. And you went from 14 years at the same job to now you're a road comic. Has it been a difficult transition, or is this what you wanted
to do? Well, I've been doing comedy on the road for a long time, so I knew it wasn't new. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew the life. No, it's actually been great. I mean, it's been – I love it. It's fun.
Good.
I mean, we're just hugging Mac and I on the way here about, like, you know, you get – I guess the transition would be this. It's like – when you're in a hotel that's like a roadside hotel that has, like, smelly water and, like, you know, and there's, like, no food to eat. Yeah. And, like, it's different than when I would travel with The Daily Show and, like, I'd fly first class and stay at, like, a Four Seasons, you know. Like, those are different. Those are a different level of travel. But that kind of stuff didn't matter to me. I mean, if that mattered to me, I would have stayed. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't care about, like, what flight I'm on or if there's slippers by my bed. As long as the bed doesn't have bed bugs, I really don't care. I would prefer to be doing things on my own terms in the roadside motel than working for someone at this point. And then, you know, it's just what it is in your life that's your priority. And I don't care about that kind of stuff. What I care about is being able to, like, do my own stuff, you know, my own jokes, be in charge of sort of my own destiny. And so that the adjustment was easy. And I like traveling and I like going solo and I like doing stuff like this and meeting people on the road. But one thing that is weird is, like, my disconnect from the news.
Yeah.
You know, like, I have no idea. Like, I really – people go, like, oh, man, L.A., it's like, you know, it's so shallow. I'm like, I know. It's awesome. It's like a vapid, like, you know, it's like a vapid land of just sort of insincerity. And, like, you know, you go – I was working on a sitcom for a while. When I left, I was working right away. Like, I did this deal with Warner Brothers, and I was writing a pilot for CBS and then working on a sitcom for NBC, which is super funny. It's going to be coming out called Undateable, with Chris D'Elia and like all these other great comics. Oh, cool. Yeah, and so I was writing on that for a while. I was a consulting producer or whatever on that. And so I left the show and was working. It's only since February that I've been, which is what, like a month, that I've really just been kind of just doing stand-up. So it's been kind of nice to like have some time and, like, you know, play some video games.
Well, let me ask you about that, because you're talking about disconnect from the news. Because when I watch the Daily Show, you know, it has this sort of like watchdog quality to it where, you know, it's pointing out all this bullshit that gets said. And it's just, I watch it and I'm like, man, I don't know how these guys do it. Like, you think that you just get burned out on how awful some of this stuff is. I mean, is that ever where you're just like, I can't handle this anymore?
Yeah.
Or is it just like, gimme, yum, 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 yum?
Well, it was gimme, yum, 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 towards the end. Uh-huh. When I was like, you know what I think about? I always think of myself as like the Joe Pantaleone character in The Matrix, who's like...
Okay, Cypher? Yeah. Cypher?
What is it? I don't know.
Yes.
Was it Duger? What was it? No, you know what I'm talking about?
Tank and A-Track.
Yeah, that's the worst part of that
movie.
They
get to choose their own names.
Yeah, he's like, that's Mouse. That's Tank. That's like...
I got to choose my own name. Yeah. I bet you didn't, Mouse. I bet you didn't.
I hated that scene so much. The intro scene. Like, give him, at least give him Doozer. Yeah. He's like, there's Doozer. That's his brother, Tank.
Yeah. I'm surprised they knew what tanks were because they were so far removed. I'm surprised no one was like, hey, this is Tampon. I read it on the back of something.
Exactly.
From a long time ago.
Yeah, right. You're right. So that scene where he says, like, I don't care, I want out. I don't care if the steak's not real.
Yeah.
Like, I just, I don't want to know. That's kind of where I got. Like, I just need ignorance is bliss. Like, I needed that for a while because it does grate on you for a while. And I started to get really, like, just angry about, like, all the stuff being said and then the politics and the left and the right and how, like, the left thinks that MSNBC is different than Fox and then go, it's a false equivalent. I don't know, man. What I see is like people talking about their agenda on one station and then people talking about their agenda on another station. And all of that stuff just started to sort of, you know, boil over.
Yeah. I wonder for you, I mean, because Fox News came along and then MSNBC came along and they became this sort of like the movie network of news where they just went for sensationalism and ridiculousness. And I just wondered if there was a point for you where it's like, well, we don't need The Daily Show anymore. They're just doing our job for us.
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely days at The Daily Show with Fox News where we'd go, hey, pitches would come in. We'd go, this is great, but we can't just make fun of Fox News because we could. In other words, there is a show called Fuck Fox News or something like, this is absurd. I mean, every day what they're doing on that network is absurd. But it just started to really irk me because it was like people were using those networks as, you know, sort of these, not people I knew, I just mean in the world.
Yeah,
it's like they started to have too much value and like they started to, you know, well, Fox said this. Well, if it's on Fox, it's not true. Well, MSNBC, well, it's not, that's not true. It's like,
I feel like once one side lionizes one of the stations, like, or it's like, oh, this is a right-wing channel, then, like, I feel like right-wingers will be like, oh, let me gather around it then.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like,
it shouldn't be that.
Yeah, it's not a flagpole for either anybody. It shouldn't
be. Right, and then what happens is the news shouldn't be on the same rating system that entertainment television is on. Yeah. So, like, what happens is Fox News starts kicking ass and goes, oh, my God, this right-wing news thing is really blowing up and they're doing really well and they're number one and they're this and they're number one, which I always found funny because Fox News always brags, we're number one, we're number one, we're number one. Mm-hmm. But then they're always like, the left-wing media controls it all. Yeah. And you're like, but you're number one.
you're the
top of the mountain. Right, so it's
the
like...
The Wall Street liberal owned by I forget.
Yeah. And then it felt like MSNBC reacted the other way. They're like, well, if the right wing makes money, let's go left, you know? And then, so then you just start realizing, oh, these are just corporations making decisions to make more money to sell advertising, which is the same thing NBC and Fox Networks are doing, except they're doing The Simpsons and Parks and Rec. It's the same thing. Hmm. So once you start to see it that way and realize that everything they're putting out there is strictly for ratings, I don't know. You know, it's like, again, it's like you start to really, or for me, I started to just feel a certain way about it all, which was, I don't know that I can deal with these people anymore. If I watch another episode of Rachel Maddow, I might put a gun in my mouth. You know, I got, you know, that's what it was. I was like, I gotta go, you know?
Hey, John, I gots to go.
Yeah. If I hear Sean Hannity's voice one more time, the noose is going around my neck. You know?
That's what it says in your tombstone.
Yeah.
I gots to go.
I gots to go, bro.
That's why I get my news the same way
I always have from falcons carrying scrolls.
Falcons, that's expensive.
Well, yeah. Family comes from money.
I'm more hawk news. Oh.
You would be hawk news.
Classic.
Well, now it's time for a mascot wedding favorite segment called Naming Names. Who's a dick? Just kidding.
Oh, man.
But actually, we need to be wrapping this up.
Yeah.
All right.
But I know. I feel like this could have gone on for much longer.
That was an amazing conversation.
I know.
Yeah.
Super fast. Thank you so much.
Was it amazing? I don't feel like it wasn't funny.
No.
You know? No, I enjoyed the shit out of it.
You guys wanted it to be funny.
Yeah, enthralled. I'm going to leave in this pandering. But really? No, it was great. Thank you.
I just like to be self-conscious about everything I do. So I just want to make sure I have all of my neuroses out.
Well, I do want to do a little bit of ass kissing here. I heard you on.
You mean talking? This podcast sucks.
We'll do one now. We'll do a little bit later.
All right.
But I heard you on another podcast that you just did the other day, the Stay Wonderful podcast that Cap City puts out.
Yeah.
And I was.
You ready to listen to that shit?
I did.
Stuff, it was fast.
I purposely did not listen to it.
Just did that.
I wanted to make sure I didn't cover any ground that
did we did I did
no
I
no
oh wow okay I yeah I was fine with that
but I did
fuck
I did.
You Aaron Brooks.
Hey Aaron, man, I'm sorry, bro. I
should have gone Fallon on this one. Just said don't do that. I did want to compliment you on how completely down to earth you are as a comic, like I mean, it's so easy to be bitter or just self-centered, but on that podcast and here now, you came across as very just easy to get along with.
I mean, the only time I get bitter is when I'm not bitter about anybody else. I just get bitter at myself when I like don't do something the way I want to do it. Like last night's show is a good example where it was actually fun for me because I was working on it and playing around and working on new stuff. But you know, then I go home and I go, I should have just, you know, it's the stand up thing that is like the kind of conundrum of stand up, which is like, you always want to kill. That's what you want to do. But at the same time, sometimes you got to work on new stuff so that you can kill and get better.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like anytime you start to play with that, when you come off stage, you go, ooh, that probably wasn't the best show for those people. Great for me because I learned, oh, I can't put that there. I'll switch that to there. But, you know, so that last night was funny. Before the show with Aaron, I was like, yeah, because the Wednesday show was great. And then after last night's show, I was like, I hate comedy.
Well, now those people that went to that show are talking about you. Fulfilling the prophecy that you had about yourself.
Yeah.
I feel like last night's show was like a weird car ride. Like you got where you were going to go, but you also like hit a kid on the way there.
For you too?
I felt it was like a weird junky. I was like, I feel like it ended okay, but that was weird.
No, but it was like, start and stop, right? It was like you have one bit to kill, then super quiet. And then like, it was like, eh. And then you got it again, and got him again, you know?
It was, I feel like it a lot of shows end up where someone's like, that was funny, now what? And I feel like the last night's crowd wasn't exactly like that, but at times maybe.
Yeah, but I never blame the crowd. I always blame me.
Well,
yeah,
fuck them. That's what I got to say.
Yeah.
Now it's our favorite segment, fuck them. Who do you hate?
Who do you hate?
That's the goal, fuck everybody.
So, people in Austin, they'll be able to see you at the Moon Tower Comedy Festival coming up in late April. Anything else you would like to plug, sir? Where can people find out more information?
Twitter. Go on Twitter, man. My name is at Rock
Dynamite.
At Rory Albers. I don't know, man. I don't really do enough self-publicity, you know? You can tell. I mean, I've been on two podcasts three podcasts in 3 days. So I'm catching fire right now.
It's at Rory Albanese on Twitter.
I'm on Instagram if you like seeing pictures of random things that I take pictures of.
I already heard about it. It's Jimmy John's. I get it.
Yeah, I actually have been. I should post a Jimmy John's. And I don't know. What do you guys do? What is your secret to, fame?
You're asking the wrong guys.
That's you want to end on that note, huh?
our advertising budget is that banner right up there.
Wow.
It's over. No, not there. Look, it's behind the other thing. You know what?
Wow,
forget
that's
it.
Amazing.
Just all these cutout copies.
Yeah. It's that was the only one we made.
You made one of them?
No, we made. We paid the merchandise manufacturer enough.
We got a skid.
Do you do merch? Do you have merch?
You're looking at it right there.
No, but I mean, when you do stand-up, do you have merch?
I do not have.
Because that's the thing they always ask me when I go to comedy clubs.
I sell my body.
Yeah, that's what I say. They go, do you have anything to sell? I go, just my soul.
Which I just gave to you, monsters.
You bastards. But it's, I don't know. I don't know what merch to have, you know?
Yeah.
I love your t-shirt cannon bit, though. That makes me feel like you should have some kind of you should have a t-shirt with a t-shirt cannon on it.
Oh.
You know?
The reason why that
that says, this came from this, and it's awesome. You know?
That's actually pretty good.
I feel like I talked about it on the show before, the catching a t-shirt cannon.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that.
Well, here's the thing. The reason why that was such a thing on my bucket list is because I love t-shirt cannons. Yeah. I don't know why.
They're amazing.
Like,
that bit, that's, I love that bit so much.
Oh, thank you.
The only, one thing I would say is, which you don't know because you're a tall guy, is every time, this has been a bane of my life, because particularly when you work at a TV show and stuff, you get tons of free t-shirts sent to you. They're not good, but they're free t-shirts, so how could you not want them?
Yeah.
But they're always XL.
Yeah.
Even like, so, it's like even whatever comes out of a fucking it's never a medium, which is the t-shirt I would wear. So I'm like, yeah, I got a t-shirt, and I'm like, let me call one of my big friends and see if he wants. You know?
Well,
let me call one of my larger friends and see if they want to wear this.
Is in the San Antonio audience there? I caught the XL, and I think anyone else there would have been like, oh, what the fuck?
And you were like, sweet, my size.
Oh, kid size. Right? I'll give this to my wife, kid.
Yeah.
Our dog can wear this. Nope, too fat. Okay,
there, fat Kevin. You'll get a shirt.
Hey.
We haven't spoken since high school. You still fat? Because I got a free t-shirt.
Well, I have been eating more.
Are you still fat?
Do tachos come with cheese?
I don't know. Do they? Of course they do. David, how are we ending the show today?
Well, let's end the show with, put me on the spot here. Someone gets, we get hit in the head with a foul ball.
Okay. Oh, man, this is such a good man.
These are great seats, yeah. Oh, there it is.
Wait, where's what?
It's the ball. It's coming right at you.
What? No.
Ow! Back out! Got me too!
The Tasty Podcast Network at tastypodcast.com.